Marhaba, and welcome to the Matrix Green Pill, where real people connect.
Hello and welcome back to the Matrix Green Pill podcast. I'm Hilmarie Hutchison, and today I am thrilled to have Casper Searsloo as my guest on the show. Casper is a seasoned marketer and a visionary thought leader dedicated to transforming in-house marketing and creative collaboration. His passion for in-house marketing is evident in his best-selling book, Moving In-House, and more recently, his newer book, Win-Win House. Casper, welcome and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So to start off, please introduce yourself and tell our audience a little bit about you and your background.
I'm Casper. I live in Copenhagen in Denmark, Northern Europe, Scandinavia. I grew up in Denmark. It's a very civilized, normal country, not a lot of disturbance, democracy. Well, actually, we just got a king. We are probably a monarchy, but we have a democracy that has to elect the king in some ways, or he has to approve everything. I used to draw a lot. I used to do a lot of cartoon and so on, and I also used to play a lot of music. And I actually get back to the music later, I think. I used to play every night in a jazz club in Copenhagen. I played the double bass.
Oh, amazing. So what was the dream growing up in Copenhagen? What did you envision yourself to be when you grew up?
I was born in Copenhagen, and then my parents decided to move to the outskirts, to the suburbs of Copenhagen. And it was extremely boring, to be honest. I hope none of my own classmates are listening in. But it was really boring, and I couldn't wait to get back to the city where there was something else happening. I think most of the people there were just fooling around and doing nothing. A couple of us just wanted to get back to the city. So I couldn't come back to Copenhagen fast enough. And the plan was actually also to go abroad and work in some advertising agencies in London and New York and so on. Then I got kids and got married, so I kind of stayed.
So you always envisioned yourself getting into some kind of marketing, advertising, into that side of the business. It was never any, your plan wasn't to become a jazz musician as a professional.
No, actually, we had a band. We wasn't really good at writing stuff ourselves, and that's the ticket you need in order to get famous as a musician, I think. But I also knew some very good musicians, and they was really struggling to make it work. And I remember I also played drums, and I had a teacher me how to play drums. And he was playing in this TV show every morning where he was playing like a Christmas show, and he was playing the bells or something like that. I was thinking, oh my God, he's really skilled. He's way better than me. And this is what he's doing every morning. He has to come to work and play Jingle Bells or something like that. It was December or something like that. So I pretty early decided that I didn't want to do that. We did have a cover band for a long time where we were just after the jazz story we were traveling Denmark and playing bars and clubs and so on. I think where other people, they play soccer or go to a football match and so on. That's how I hang out with my friends. We ended up playing music every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night somewhere around the country, traveling around.
You also said you like to draw, you like to sketch as well.
Yeah, that's how the advertising thing started. I've always been drawing from cartoon or just taking notes. I actually talked to you about this earlier on when I was writing in one of my books and I couldn't really concentrate. So I ended up sketching a guidebook for Copenhagen. So I always sketch whenever I do something. And I also do that in advertising, even though I have AIs and computers and stuff. I still like to have the black ink and white paper to get the ideas right. But it was actually my grandfather, he was a painter, and he said, oh, you need to be like a sketch artist or do advertising billboards or something like that. That's where the money is. Of course, he didn't know anything about advertising at all. He was more like a craftsman.
Where the rest of us just doodle while we're concentrating and just throw it away. Actually, doodled something so creative that you were actually able to create the whole book out of it. That's absolutely fantastic.
It's a crazy story. I was supposed to write a really complicated chapter in the book about processes and structures and how important workflow is when you build an in-house agency. I knew I had all the ideas in my head. I just needed to put them in order and write it. And then I said, our office is in the center of Copenhagen, and it was summer and it wasn't so busy. So I said to myself, maybe I should just go outside and sit on the docks and watch something and just try to make things work. And then I just started doodling, and I started by doing the Opera House and then the Royal Palace, the office right next to the Royal Palace. I can sit from the window and look into his garden, the new king. So I started doing that. And then at the evening, I had a friend over and said, oh, this is kind of funny. I ended up doing like 10 sketches of this. Maybe I should do this Secret Places in Copenhagen guidebook. And he said, it's a nice idea, but you drew the Royal Palace and the Opera House and so on. It's not really secret places, you know. And he was kind of right. So I ended up saying, okay, then I have to do 10 more or 20 more. And then I had 50 or 80 pages that I could write my notes to what I think people should see. So I think that's how it ended up like being a guidebook. I did the other book later, a couple of weeks after that, to the difficult chapter.
Once you allowed all your creative juices to come out in that, then you were able to focus and get down to the serious business. But I love that story. How absolutely brilliant. So since your office has a view of the Royal Palace, were you able to watch the coronation or the last, what was it, 2 weeks ago when the new king came into...
I was there. It's close by. So I couldn't see it from the office. It's his backyard. So he didn't go there. But I was in Copenhagen with everybody else, I think. The whole country was gathered there.
My goodness, I saw the pictures. It was absolutely crazy how many people lined all of those streets, but so organized and so controlled. It was absolutely fantastic.
I would really have loved it to be in the summer. I mean, I love Copenhagen in the summer. It was cold. The weather was fine, but I think in summer it would have been amazing. But it was really, really impressive to see all those people, and everybody was just behaving and they were cheering, but it wasn't really loud or noise.
Yeah, it was a pretty cold day in Copenhagen for that, yes.
The weather is nice, but it's cold.
As you say, in Denmark, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing, right?
We sometimes say we love the Danish summer. It's the best day of the year.
Got to enjoy that one day. Well, this has been fun. Well, let's get back into the serious stuff. So your journey then started out in advertising, and I know your journey includes having steered a startup and also overseeing global campaigns for a major shipping company. How have your diverse experiences shaped your approach to marketing and collaboration?
I think coming from the normal advertising industry, I mean, Denmark is a small country, so we can't really have a lot of different experts. A lot of the people that I work with and the way we're brought up in the Danish advertising industry is you're kind of jack of all trades. You don't have a fine art artist or a copywriter that only writes the headlines. So you have to do a bit of everything. And I think that shaped me in a lot of ways. That I said before, I had a mentor or my first boss who said, if draw it, take that big black ink marker and draw it, because later on we can brief a photographer, we can bring in all the experts, but if you can draw it and I understand it and I think it's good or funny, then it will work anyway. But if you spend 3 hours on the computer doing something, then you're wasting your time. You're also too invested in that idea. You spend too much time on it, and maybe it's a bad idea, but you made it look good. That shaped me a lot, and I tried to teach that when we went in-house and I built the in-house agency at Maersk, to try to focus on the idea itself, and then you can always expand it to different mediums or different ways of telling the same story and so on. So that shaped me a lot.
That's excellent. What was the pivotal moment that led you to transition from working with brand agencies to focusing on elevating in-house marketing?
I was actually working at an advertising agency. It sounds strange, but we were very successful. But we had like this one A team that I was part of, and we won a lot of pitches. I think we won McDonald's and some of the big one, Microsoft. Or something. I think we won 9 out of 10 pitches one summer, but I was only involved in the pitching team. So whenever we won something, it was somebody else taking over. And I always had this feeling that the great ideas were not necessarily in the core. It was sometimes when you work with something for a week or two and you found out that you could do something special on the website that actually helped people, not just doing an advertising thing. I don't know if I'm explaining it right, but it's on the outskirts of the idea that the great things sometimes happen. And I really, really missed that in the advertising agency. It was so much moving to the next project, winning the pitch and so on. I had a friend who worked at Maersk and said, oh, there's a new head of marketing or CMO, and she's looking for something else. I think you should meet her because I think she's great. I met her and she said, oh, amazing. Can you start on Monday? So that was really fast. Had to, of course, to resign the other job and move on. That was really interesting. And at Maersk, they had this thing where I wasn't head of creative or anything at that point. I was just hired in. They had this thing where you have to go and actually see what's happening in the front line, so you don't just end up sitting in an office. And I went to Mumbai, to India, and sit there. And I realized that both the marketing team, I also went to Egypt at the same time and the same trip. And I realized that a lot of different places were doing the same kind of marketing materials. They were spending a lot of time with local agencies to creating generic stuff that we could do globally. That was one of the ideas that I came back with. Said, why don't we not necessarily go for the big ideas? That maybe that makes sense to do local in India because there's a different culture, there's a different scent. For something like how to book a container online, we don't need to do that with an Indian flavor. It's the same online tool. So maybe we should have a small team that could do that. And she said, well, that sounds great. Can you build a team that can do that? That's really how it happened. I probably owe it more to her than to myself that we did that.
Fantastic. So what I'm hearing you saying is, like, in the beginning, you felt like you could have more impact if you were on the in-house side of things rather than sitting on the outside and just giving the ideas and then moving on to the next thing, that you could have far more of an impact in-house.
Yeah, I think especially when you work with complex product, and I think Maersk, it seems like it's easy. It's just containers going around the world, but the pure scale of it is complicated. The different kind of things, not that you can put it in a container, it sounds like really simple. The different industries that you're tapping into, let's say you're shipping fish from mussels from somewhere, or you're shipping flowers or meat or waste metal. It's a lot of different industries that you have to understand how they are working, how their workflows, communities, processes are working, so you can tap in and help them. And the whole complexity of that is just something we never touched on when I was in advertising. It was more like doing a fun film and so on. So actually trying to dig deeper into it. And I think that's where in-house was really interesting for me, is that deep product knowledge that you can actually turn into something creative down the road.
Let's talk about your books. Congratulations, first of all. I know your books have been a big hit. First of all, you had Moving In-House, and then more recently, Win-Win House, as I mentioned in the introduction. Can you tell us what led you, first of all, to write the books?
When I built the in-house agency at Maersk, I was looking around to figure out how to do this, and I couldn't really find any guides on how to build an in-house agency. I didn't know a lot of people who did it, and also the ones I knew, they were more like production studios. They weren't really trying to be creative. That was actually the idea for the first one, Moving In-House. That was, what kind of tasks should you take in? How could you do it? So it's really a guidebook. Also, I mentioned a lot of my mistakes and the things I did wrong, so hopefully people will do so many of those. When I started out, my idea was to build a fully in-house where we had everything, we could do all the things. And I pretty soon realized that we didn't have enough tasks to bring in the really great creative people that I wanted to work with. So that was kind of a problem. We had the drag jack of all trades who could do a bit of everything, but they didn't really have the depth to do big campaigns or something like that. I realized that we had to bring in people for different places in the process, different steps in the process. And that actually led to the next one, where we talk a lot about, maybe you should have an external agency helping you with the processes, coming in with the creative people only when you need them, back to the blank ink white paper thing. Only bring in really creative people to come up with the ideas. Then you can do it yourself. You know the processes, you know your platforms, your websites, and so on. So that's what the Win-Win House is about. That's figuring out what part of the house should you bring in and what part should you buy outside. It's a lot about the creativity part. How do you work with that one? How do you become more creative as an in-house agency? How do you learn to spot the things? Because one of the advantages of being in-house is that you can move outside your brief. I have an example when I was at Georg Jensen, which is a jewelry company, where we were actually looking at the website, and the web team, they came down and they said, people are not buying enough rings on our website. And said, oh, that's strange. Yeah, you need to change the color. It's too Scandinavian, too pale in the design. I said, oh, that sounds strange anyway, but let's look at it. And we looked at this hot jar, that's a heat map of what people were doing. And we could see a lot of men coming in on the front page, finding a ring on the front page, and they clicked on, they went to the product page, and then they clicked on this pale buy button. So the problem wasn't really they were not were clicking, but a few seconds after they clicked on the button, they realized there was a small tiny drop down above where you have to pick the ring size. And that's really what stopped them. They clicked on this one, and then they had to pick between 12 or 13 different ring sizes, and nobody knows the ring size or the size of the ring they need to buy for their loved one. But not at least anyone I know. We said it's not the color, it's something else. And then we developed the small ring sizer app so you could at home steal a ring from your loved one. and put it on the screen and you could see the size of it. And then you could, of course, buy one of our rings or anyone else's rings. Sorry, it's a long story, but the idea is when you're in-house, you can sometimes challenge the brief. You can go somewhere else. So the idea was never to do a ring sizer app. It was to change the color on a website button. But when you are close to the business, you can go and ask the people in the production or the engineers and say, why is this important? And who is this helping? And so on. So you get something, you get a brief that's not necessarily shaped out of another marketing guy. Sometimes you hear it from the people who are working with it, or you can spot the things yourself. That's a really long story. Sorry for that.
No, I love that. I think that's excellent because it shows then by having the team in-house, as you say, you are able to find solutions for real problems that other teams within the companies are facing. So you've now then created your own agency where you help companies to set up their in-house competencies. Am I right?
Yeah, we do five things, actually. So we run in-house agencies for companies. So some companies, they say, that's not really our core business. Can you do it for us? So we have in-house agencies where we have the people on the floor living just 50 meters down the hallway and are their in-house agency. Other people in the company doesn't even know that this is an external agency. Sometimes the company, after we set it up and built everything with the workflows and processes, we said, we want it back. And then they buy it back. So we just also build it for people hiring in, setting up processes. And then we have like the analyst design phase where we look at what are they doing now? What are they buying? Back to the win-win house idea. What kind of stuff are they buying with external agencies? What kind of things should they do themselves and how should they collaborate? So that's where we analyze and design the process. So it's really all about in-house. And then we realized when we had five different agencies, we needed more flexibility. People were off on maternity leave. They were just leaving, or we had an open role, peak period. So we also created, in lack of a better name, a travel team who can service the different agencies whenever they need help. I think that's the fifth leg or whatever we call it in what we're doing. But it's really about in-house and how you can do it better. And I'm not saying any of the solutions having us run it or us helping it running is better. It really depends on what you're doing and what kind of company you're doing. Sometimes we just help with how do you set up better creative processes, for instance. So,
what would you say are the most significant challenges that brands face when trying to establish their in-house team?
A couple of really big things that people are missing. When they establish, I think most of them don't acknowledge that you need a lot of processes. So the really boring stuff, the processes and workflows and so on. I sometimes refer to back when I was playing jazz music in Copenhagen late at night. We were playing this sitting in thing. So I was in the backing band together with the drummer. And then we had a lot of really good musicians, I'm not that good, coming in and jamming on top of us. And they would just say, oh, play this song in A minor and follow me. Here we go. The drummer and I, we had to know, I don't know, 30, 40 different standard songs and so on. And then we had this lead good musician coming in. And it's a lot like that when we're working. We kind of built the standards, the workflows, the main songs that the backing band is playing. And then sometimes you can jam on top of that. But if you don't know the song, everybody is just playing random notes at different times and so on. So I know it's a weird anecdote, but it's just made sense now to bring in. And that's one of the things that I see most companies who are trying to build in-house agencies are missing. That's processes and so on. It even goes to when you talk about creativity, figuring out how do you get a great idea? How do you work with new ideas? How do you come up with ideas and so on? I think a lot of people think it's like a eureka moment and ideas just come out of thin air. But everyone that is really good that I know, they have a process for that. They sit down, they read, they do this, they brainstorm in a different way and so on. That's the big issue when you try to build something, is really setting those workflows up.
A practical question. Oftentimes you can create the processes, the workflow, as you say, sometimes even the boring stuff. How do you get teams to follow the processes that make sense?
A lot of times they realize it's really a good idea. It was actually, and now we talk about the green pill moments. One of my green pill moments was actually when I started building my second advertising in-house agency, because I did all this at Maersk simply because we needed to figure out how to do this. The day we opened, I think we got 64 briefs for campaign and we were 10 people or so on. So we had to figure out how are we doing this? Who is doing what, when? And my green pill moment at the second job was that 80 or 90% 90% of these processes were exactly the same. Even though this was a fintech company selling an app and so on, it was something completely different. But the way you work with marketing is the same. I mean, the idea itself or the design is different, but you don't have to come up with a new way to develop display banner or an outdoor or a film. That's pretty much just processes. So I think normally the way that we do it when we introduce all these really complicated workflows is we show them how we think it should be. And since we've done it a lot, we have like templates for it. And then we start going through, kind of play this game with them, say, okay, we can do it two ways. One of them is taking like the last campaign. Is this how it happened or how did it happen? So we start up reverse engineering a campaign. Said, how did we actually end up here? Who did what? When? Where did we do something wrong? The funny thing is that people pretty soon realize that you need this. It's not like a big process you need on the wall all the time and say, we are here now, but now we need to go to this step. It's just as long as you know that you have a process for it. So you also know when you're stepping out of the normal process.
Okay, so it's not like one process fits everyone, one size fits all. You have a unique solution or a unique process for each team or for each thing that you are doing that's going to see success for that project, whatever that is.
I would still say that 90% of the main process are actually the same. And then another thing is the gates. This is where companies waste the most time, is that change their minds too late. Say, okay, now we have the idea. We put it down on a white piece of paper with a blank marker. This is the idea. Now we need to create the core assets, the one image that everybody's going to remember, the one headline. Then you move on, write smaller bits and so on. And as long as you have these gates, say, we don't move to the next stage. We don't start to create something unless we are sure that this is the right idea. Then you actually optimize the process a lot. There's really no rocket science in this. It's really simple, but it's just as long as you remember to not move ahead. I think a lot of time people are jumping to conclusions. They're eager to get to their computer and start setting up ads and so on, instead of actually just taking a step back and thinking, is this the right idea? Is this the right way to do it?
I like that. So it's like creating the logo before you know what you're selling.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go a little bit further back again, because you mentioned that at Maersk you were tasked with building a team when you had no experience doing that. What would you say are the key elements of building successful creative synergies with in-house teams?
I would say trust and diversity. I've been proved wrong a lot of times, but I still trust people a lot. So if I have this gut feeling that this guy could do it, I will give them the key. I would say, here you go. You do what you think. And then ask me for help anytime you need help. If you want advice, come to me. But now it's your project and so on. So trust that people can do it. And then different people, hire people with different perspectives, different backgrounds, different ethnicity and so on, because they bring something different to the table. And it's easy for me to say I come from a very homogeneous country in up north, but sometimes you are challenged and people say, but that's not how the real world works, or that's not how I see it. And then you have to reevaluate the things. I always say when I work with young people, it says, take the task, even though you don't know how to do it, then you learn. So always look, if you're the boss, look for the people who raise their hands and say, I will do it. I'll take it. I have no experience in this, but I will do it, because that's the guy you want to have on your team, or the girl.
Yes, be willing to accept challenges, even though you're not maybe an expert yet.
Yeah, then learn. I hired this girl, Sophia. Actually hired her twice, I think, at two different companies. And she didn't have a great portfolio. Sorry, Sophia, if you're listening. But she had a nice portfolio with some drawings and so on. But she was just so eager to learn. I mean, I gave her a job of editing a video the first week. And she just went home and saw all the tutorials on YouTube on how to do it and so on. And I really love that spirit of just, I'm not saying work on your spare time, but jump in, take the task and say, I don't know how to do this, but I will figure it out. And I will come and ask anytime there's something I don't know, but otherwise I will just try. That's what I hire for, to be honest.
That's our policy as well. We hire for attitude, because skill can be taught.
I agree.
For those in our audience listening who are now inspired to revamp their in-house marketing teams, what would you advise them before they embark on this transformative journey?
I would start with the really boring part. Look at the processes. Look at who's doing what. I know it sounds really boring, but sometimes you realize that a lot of people are doing what they're not good at or they're not the best at. So you have your graphic designer always also being his own project manager, answering emails from people who has questions to the design. Hire in a project manager for that. They are really good at project managing. That's what they do. And the same with the copywriters. It's probably not the first step. The first step is to look at how could you easy start this and be a success? Because in reality, no one will stop your company for 6 months in order for you to build the perfect in-house. So maybe it's kind of the same when you hire young people. Say, I can do this, and then start small saying, oh, we're not going for the big campaigns. We're just starting building the success from the bottom. This is where we can add a lot of value for money by creating the low creativity assets like brochures or prints out and so on. And then eat your way up by being accessible, being the yes people, so to speak. So that's my second advice, I think, which is probably the first advice. And then the other one is the second advice. Hire in project managers, get all the boring stuff in order, figure out a way that you can track all your projects, because you also need to show internally that you can do this. So find a project managing tool, track how many tasks you do every month and so on, so you can show that you are success, that you can show that you are faster than external agencies, that you are cheaper. Not that it's a price thing, but it always is.
Very good. Thank you for that. And of course, they can read your book and they'll get some good tips from that as well.
Yeah, they can read that one. There are some good tips. We also have a free report on our website called the In-House Barometer on the tendencies in-house marketing that they can download. They can reach out and I can give them the insights from the book as well.
Perfect. Excellent. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Now we've come to the segment of our show where I'll ask you some rapid fire questions, our version of a game show. Are you ready?
Yeah, let me have.
What is one thing on your bucket list?
I want to travel more. I've been too much at home for the last couple of years. I want to go back to Tokyo.
That was going to be my next question. What's your favorite holiday destination?
I actually love all the places I've been, I think. I have like this Volkswagen California that you can raise the roof and you can sleep in and there's a small kitchen. So I'd love to drive around Europe, actually anywhere I can go. But I would say France or Spain or Italy.
Are you a morning person or a night person?
I just got a small puppy, so now I'm a morning person. But normally I would say I'm a night person.
What is one thing you do every day, no matter how busy you are?
I draw every day. And I read every day.
Thank you very much for playing along. That was easy enough. Now, before we wrap up, I'd like to do our Green Pill moment. What was your Green Pill moment, the action or event that was the turning point for you or your career?
The boring story, if we start with that one, and then we can see if I can figure out another one, was the Maersk moment when my boss said, what do you think we should do with marketing? And I just said, I think we should build our own. And then I ended up building in-house agencies for at least the last 15 years or 12 years or something like that. I think that was a pretty big coming from just being a creative guy moment to change everything. But it's also very work-related. So another green pill moment would be, I also think it was actually after being in-house corporate, it was the decision to write a book, because that changed a lot in terms of just, I started out as a single consultant just with the book, and it changed a lot to actually put all these thoughts and all the things that I just did down on paper. It opened a lot of doors to have written a book. So sharing that, all those things in the book, and realize I had to do another one and another one and so on.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that with us. And thank you for being here and sharing your fantastic story. You've certainly accomplished a lot. You've changed a lot for in-house teams. I'm sure there's some in-house managers listening to this that will be inspired to make the changes and bring their marketing in-house. Before we say goodbye, then, could you please tell our listeners where they can find and follow you? And we'll also put this in the show notes.
They can find me on LinkedIn. I'm the only one with that name. Search for the last name and you will find me. Seriously, you can pronounce it any way you want. They can go to winwinhouse.com and find the book and get the first chapter for free and so on. So they can actually read if it's interesting or boring, and then they can not buy it or reach out. I always answer questions on LinkedIn and anywhere. So just reach out if you want to chat, and I'm open for that.
Thank you very much, Casper. This has been so entertaining and I've learned a lot from you. So thank you for that. And I wish you all the very best. And for sure, I'll be following your journey as well.
Some interesting things coming up. I'm just finishing or actually I need to proofread, which is the boring part, her next book about creativity in-house, which goes really into depth on how creativity works and how you can work with creativity. And that's, yeah, I'll come back and talk about that in a year or so.
I would love that. I would love to welcome you back and we can talk about the new book. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's fun to read about, read all the studies and so on.
Thank you so much.
Really nice talking to you and being here.
If you enjoy our conversations, please like and subscribe. See you next Wednesday.